Hi, I'm Andrew Rich, and if you're like me, you look at the state of modern wrestling discourse and think, wow, what a cesspool. That's why I'm here to tell you about Music of the Mat Remix. That's right, your favorite wrestling music podcast is back with a new format, where I bring on a guest and we play songs related to wrestling-themed topics. It could be a wrestling reference, a wrestling concept, a wrestling pun, things of that nature. Now you might be saying, Andrew, that is a very, very tenuous connection to pro wrestling on a wrestling podcast network. Is this just an excuse to hang out with your friends and talk about music and ignore the rest of the wrestling landscape? Yes. Yes, it is. So listen to Music of the Mat Remix on the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network, available on Apple, Spotify, or your podcast player of choice.
For a limited time at Verizon, you can get our best price ever for a single line. Just $45 per month when you bring your phone, which is less than you spend on too tired to cook takeout every week. Get one line on unlimited welcome for $45 per month with AutoPay plus taxes and fees. Visit your local Columbus Verizon store by April 2nd to save. $20 monthly promo credits applied over 36 months with a new line on unlimited welcome. In times of congestion, unlimited 5G and 4G LTE may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Domestic data roaming at 2G speeds. Additional terms apply. For a limited time at Verizon, you can get our best price ever for a single line. Just $45 per month when you bring your phone, which is less than you spend on too tired to cook takeout every week. Get one line on unlimited welcome for $45 per month with AutoPay plus taxes and fees. Visit your local Columbus Verizon store by April 2nd to save. $20 monthly promo credits applied over 36 months with a new line on unlimited welcome. In times of congestion, unlimited 5G and 4G LTE may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Domestic data roaming at 2G speeds. Additional terms apply. For a limited time at Verizon, you can get our best price ever for a single line. Just $45 per month when you bring your phone, which is less than you spend on too tired to cook takeout every week. Get one line on unlimited welcome for $45 per month with AutoPay plus taxes and fees. Visit your local Cleveland Verizon store by April 2nd to save. $20 monthly promo credits applied over 36 months with a new line on unlimited welcome. In times of congestion, unlimited 5G and 4G LTE may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Domestic data roaming at 2G speeds. Additional terms apply.
This podcast is a member of the Voices of Wrestling Podcasting Network. Visit voicesofwrestling.com to hear the rest of our great podcasts, as well as show reviews, columns, opinions, and updates across the world of wrestling.
To the highway, in a brand new day. Gotta let it go. So
Faster Freedom.
Welcome back to Open the Voice Gate for February 6th, 2025. We are members of the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network. You can find us on the Voices of Wrestling Podcast feed or on our dedicated Open the Voice Gate feed on all podcast platforms and applications. You can follow us on social media at Open Voice Gate. If you'd like to donate to the show, click the link in the show notes. It'll take you to our redcircle.com landing site. You click the red boxes to sponsor this podcast, and you can set up a one-time a reoccurring donation, no obligation whatsoever, but we would like to thank all of our previous donors. I am one of your hosts. It's your old pal, Mike Spears, joined alongside with your other host, KS Lowe. And KS, we were just talking about this before we hopped on the call. I think I finally found my antidote for how out I am on US wrestling.
Wow. Okay. Go ahead.
I just need to watch, to just like only watch AEW pay per views and then just whatever Deadlock's doing.
Deadlock Pro is very good. I have to thank our friend Alan Forel for putting over the Speedball Mike Bailey Jake something tag team early last
great
year.
Tag team.
I really enjoyed that. I think for Voice of Wrestling match of the year, I did not have it in my top 10. It was my last cut was Jake something and Speedball against the Motor City Machine Guns and Deadlock. I almost put that on my match of the year list. I quite enjoy the promotion. I think they're very simple. I mean US wrestling not my favorite. not the best thing ever. And it, yeah, but, oh, by you, we're so, it's weird. This means nothing to anybody listening, but we're recording at a way different time than normal. We're like mid-afternoon. And all of a sudden, my mind just opened up, and I had a million thoughts hit me all at once about what I would do with Ring of Honor and AEW TV and the good and bad of it and Deadlock and the other indies. And it's just, I just got flooded with a million takes all at once, and I can't get any of them out. But in short, Deadlock Pro, enjoyable promotion.
Yeah, Jake, something, we add him onto the Yamato list of promotional champions that feel like the champion of the promotion and conduct themselves of it. Also, I have to say, as someone who was a longtime Dominic Guarini hater, really, Violence is Forever, I finally, like, I don't know if it's just seeing them in this kind of format, it's kind of finally turned that switch in my head for me.
I remain incredibly partial to Kevin Koo, and I often wonder what he would be like with a different tag team partner.
And it's one of those things that, like, I think it's an interesting contrast to, with at least, like, what we've talked about last week of Gate of Bayside, is seeing promotions that, I mean, yeah, Deadlock has, like, such a big Patreon backing because of their podcasts, and the booking, I think, is, and the people that they book is also extremely smart, a lot of Carolina based people for a Carolina based promotion. But the thing that is the big takeaway for me is, man, you can make independent wrestling look really good and always look strong on camera and pop. And I think Deadlock, I was really pleasantly surprised, even on a show like the that no one was at, like the title fight in Texas, it still looked amazing on camera.
Yeah, no, I really like what they do. It's not overly complicated. It's really just enjoyable pro wrestling, and that is becoming harder and harder to find. And, you know, they have a similar tone to CMLL in the sense that they've kind of built up a reputation where I know what I'm going to get. Very rarely is it anything that I would define as absolute must watch. CMLL obviously has a little bit more of that than Deadlock does, but it's just nice knowing, hey, I'm going to sit down for 2 hours and I get the general idea of what's going to happen, and I'm largely going to very much enjoy it.
Yeah, and there's something to be said about show-to-show booking continuity. That's like a weird itch that I know that for me individually have not really been in hotbeds of independent pro wrestling over the last 10 years, really, from where I have lived. But being able to, and I feel like that's like the lost art that the super indie boom kind of killed, was the idea of show to show storytelling as it pertains to indies, and seeing like Deadlock basically be able to, like, the whole LeBron Cazone storyline with Adam Priest bleeding into Titus Alexander is just excellent stuff. Like, it's just simple but well done booking.
It's one of those things that, you know, Deadlock, I think, very obviously is trying to emulate a lot of the golden era Ring of Honor stuff, and I think they're largely succeeding in that. When Gabe had his fastball, the show-to-show booking was so strong, and that is various points in Ring of Honor, that is more so a period of evolve than Dragon Gate USA.
Yeah.
You never fully had it in Dragon Gate USA, but that was also, I think, you
the
know,
pay-per-views.
There were roadblocks that he basically set up in his own way that he could never get past. But yeah, I mean, we went into an era where the match quality was incredibly high, but the booking was oftentimes just not there or nonsensical. I always appreciated AEW in Chicago. They were never great. That was a promotion that for a very long time had a very good roster, was well booked. The booking made sense, but they were never able to do angles that were really exciting. They had a certain tone to their wrestling that I really liked, but their angles always bled over into just some vibe that I was never a fan of, even if it made sense on a show-to-show basis. And Deadlock is a little bit more what I'm looking for in that department.
Yeah, it definitely has a feeling that I don't necessarily think has been kept very well towards the indies, and I'm certain the wrestling revolver has show to show storytelling, but I just look at the brain trust there and I go, like, I don't need to know what Sami Callihan and John Moxley's booking tendencies are. I see enough of John Moxley right now. As I think I've just found the new Chikara replacement. or like another promotion attempting to be a Chikara.
It's Gran Akuma was talking about it in the Voice of Wrestling Discord. What's the name of the promotion?
Power Pro Lucha, I think.
Okay, yeah, that's right. Now, I believe Gran Akuma said that Quack is not involved with that, but it does look and feel and have the same energy even on paper as Chikara, which I say complimentary.
Yeah, and I think you had enough of a base between like past like peak Chikara workers and just people around the Northeast area to be able to do this. I did have to say, I appreciate the fact as I'm like scrolling through this right now. We're about to get into the Dragon Gate, I promise. I appreciate that now we are so mid-90s SNES RPG brain rotted that now there is a promotion that is doing Earthbound for SNES style graphics.
I have no idea what you just said.
That entire sentence, I know. Like I'm talking about a game that was out 5 years before you were born,
man. Okay, all right.
Yeah,
normally I could hang. I have no idea what that meant.
For a very niche of a niche, that will make a lot of sense for them.
But, okay. Yeah, no. Congratulations, Joe Gagne. I think you would be the one to understand that.
it's going to be Joe Gagne or Patrick Cosmos.
Okay, all right. Well, hey, two people I enjoy greatly, so that's good company there. Before we talk about Dragon Gate, have you watched, and I know the answer is no, but I'm going to ask anyways, have you watched Kosei Fujita versus El Desperado from New Japan yet?
I have programmed the Mike Spears Gets His Groove Back tour, like starting with Deadlock. This weekend, Lucha. I'm going to be getting into your list. And then before New Beginning coming up on February 11th, which is one of those Japanese national holidays, I'm going to get through at least the top line stuff leading up to New Beginning, including the Fujita and Despy match. I've always been high on Kosei Fujita, though.
As have I. And I've always been a little bit lower on Despy than other people, but that match delivered. That match was worth the hype. It warmed my heart. I don't know the last time there was a non-G1, non-Super Juniors New Japan match that felt quite like that. Now, I'll note the asterisk. I did not watch that really hyped New Japan tag from December. I think it was December. That was like Zach and Oiwa and two other guys. I don't remember the configuration of the match. There was a big tag match that got a ton of buzz in New Japan at the end of last year. Didn't watch that. I meant to, never got around to it. So for me, this was like, oh, New Japan in front of a hot corking crowd. This feels like pre-pandemic. This is so enjoyable. And Fujita was unreal in that match. So I would recommend that as well.
Yeah, I mean, he's 22, too.
I didn't realize he was that young.
Yeah. This is like the one instance of New Japan having a young guy and capitalizing them when they are still aggressively young versus 5 years down the road.
Very much so.
But yeah, no, it's interesting because it pertains to Dragon Gate, seeing all the shows pop up for next Tuesday, essentially the 11th. And at least at that time going like, I don't know if there's like a holiday there. And then going like, oh, yeah, no, it's the historical foundation of Japan Day. And that's why everyone's running on the 11th.
Big day. One of my favorites.
I mean, it's no Aquamarine Day or Respect for the Age, but it's an important one nonetheless. However, we need to talk about Dragon Gate, a big week for the promotion. We're going to primarily talk about yesterday, reason why we're recording on Thursday afternoon. Yesterday's April 5th, Cork and Hall show. A lot of stuff coming out of it, and I think we're just going to take Cork and Review just big up top in case. The big news coming out of Cork, and the Prodigal Son is coming back. We still have a couple weeks without him, but Yuki Yoshioka is finally returning to the live roster.
Yuki Yoshioka is back. Everybody can relax. I know, and I'm not saying anybody's wrong for this. I know people got gravely concerned after Gate of Bayside that they were doing a Reiwa 6 thing and Yoshioka was nowhere to be found. I had a feeling that Yoshioka would come back on this show. I would have been far more concerned had he not come back here than a lot of people were post Bayside. And it's a great thing to see. You know, I certainly have more concerns about Dragon Gate in early February of 2025 than I did in early January of 2025. And that's something we can talk about as we talk about the main event. But in terms of the post-match angle, look, Yoshioka's back, and Dragon Gate had the year that they had last year, which was a year of growth, a year of very, very good wrestling, great booking, and a year where the main event town in Dragon Gate, I thought by and large was the best part of the promotion, which is certainly not always the case. You know, sometimes there are years where the mid-card and upper mid-card stuff delivers far more than the main event scene.
The rookie side.
So, you know, worst case scenario, we're losing our minds over the rookies and nothing else on the card. But they did everything they did last year without Yoshioka. And I mentioned that a few different times throughout the year. I mentioned that the last time I recorded with Joe Lanza and we talked about Dragon Gate, and he has made his feelings on Yoshioka very clear. I thoroughly disagree with them, but, you know, for everybody else, that either enjoys Yoshioka or is unfamiliar to him, or at least has an open mind to him, I always wanted to be sure to mention that, like, hey, they're doing this without a former Dreamgate champion who was a great Dreamgate champion, who had been a phenomenal wrestler prior to winning the belt and was a great wrestler after winning the belt. So for him to be back is quite exciting.
And the thing I would add to that is, and I think this is the kind of the tragedy of his last 14 months. Like, people might not remember, he was a positive draw as champion. Like, it was a situation where when Yoshioka won in 2022 at Kobe World and all throughout his reign, at the big shows, some of it was coming out of reduced capacity too, but like on a loop to loop basis, he was a positive draw in a way that I think that we could probably say Kakuta and Benkei, at least the most recent time, wasn't. So all of that was accomplished when you list draws in 2024 in Dragon Gate, they were losing one of their top five draws for the last 14 months.
Yeah, certainly a bigger star than Kakuta, Strong Machine J, or Coach Minoura. And Dragon Gate doesn't really have a lot of this where you have somebody come back. You know, it's one of the things that made the Flamita comeback last year so exciting. Even though Yoshioka obviously never left the promotion, he missed such a large period of time. I really think it's worth noting, you know, the last time that he wrestled in Korakuen Hall, it was December 5th, 2013, or I'm sorry, not 2013, it was December 5th, 2023. Mike, this is the show that had Viento and Demus on it.
And
and the semi-main event was Daya and Yoshioka against Dragon Kid and Eita. Now, to put this further in perspective, the month before that, so the second to last time that he wrestled in Korakuen Hall, that was the 8-man tag with Jackie, Jason, Casey, and Strong Machine J against Daya, Kakuta, Yoshioka, and the D-Courage debut of Ryoya Tanaka. That is how long Yoshioka's been out of action.
Yeah, and I would argue, like, when you look at people and when you look at this promotion and people going away, D-Courage was able to accomplish what they did in 2024 without arguably their most important member. And when you like watch the cards in 2024, at least, and for newer, I guess, listeners, I will put myself out there. Yuki Yoshioka is my favorite member of the Big Six. Like, I think that he did incredible work as Dreamgate champion. I think that the whole rise of that was some of the best booking of Ryo Saito's early tenure as GM was the rise of Yuki Yoshioka. And I feel like at least in 2024, there was a definite, like in comparison to like Flamita's return and all the good feelings that brought, it was great seeing Flamita because he came back and was like, hey, we didn't know if you would be back here and you're awesome now. Without Yoshioka, we knew what we lost, I would say, over the last 15 months. And it's in particular, the way that like the Twin Gate was set up really for a longer D-Courage storyline, like leading into that match against that was going to be against Kaito Kiyomi and Alejandro. That match Yuki Yoshioka was calling for about 6 months before he got that. So the whole entire Twin Gate division in 2024 looks completely different if Yoshioka did not have this injury. I mean, like, just so much of what happened with Not Hug and then leading into Paradox and all of that, who knows what all would have occurred if Yuki Yoshioka was healthy and they didn't have to vacate the Twin Gates in 2023.
Yeah, it was something that it's almost become lost history because of the way that Daya ended the year. But you have to remember, the first 6 months of D-Courage in 2024, they were complete afterthoughts because we were shifting into what we thought was going to be Big Hug as your primary babyface unit that feels hotter, feels like Decourage did at the start of 2022. And, you know, Tanaka was having really fun matches, but Kakuta was being downcycled, and Daya, prior to getting hot, was at the lowest point that he had been in quite some time. And so Decourage was just a non-factor. Now, luckily, Daya heated up, Tanaka continues to be Tanaka, and Kakuta had enough showcases in the second half of the year to where Decourage really picked up some momentum, and then obviously Big Hug faded away, and here we are now. But Yoshioka is re-entering a unit that feels very hot. You know, I don't think if he was re-entering Decourage where Decourage was at this time last year, I don't think this would have felt like as big of a deal. And he's also entering a story that I have slight reservations about, and I'll explain that in just a second. But this Yamato, KZ now, Reiwa 6 story is one that I am really invested in. I am really enjoying. I am only concerned about the fact, and Mike, please tell me if you think I'm making too much of a deal about this, but 1,100 fans in Cork and Hall, Gate of Bayside was flat. On one hand, I feel like they are doing everything right with this story, and yet I feel we've now had enough time to scratch our heads and go, wait, why isn't this drawing more fans? Why isn't Dragon Gate doing 1,500 guaranteed with Yamato as the Dreamgate champion in Cork and Hall every month? I don't get it. I'm not sure if Yoshioka is going to fix that, but he might be the shot in the arm that this feud at the box office needs.
Yeah, I was a little surprised by the number announced, especially given when you compare it to the Cork wins that were happening at the middle of January. Like, there was all kinds of rationale, and it was to be expected, I would say, that it ended up with that. It's a situation where I look at the show, and even though you had that announced main event coming out of Bayside and all the changes around and adding to the semi-main event via Kyoto, I don't think this was a very deep card, to be honest. I don't think that you had Daya and Tanaka versus Rita and Jackie Kamei. That's that as your go-to intermission match, that felt like it was kind of, that was felt like where it should be. But you look at other things on this card, and I mean, no disrespect, but Hyo and Monte, and Hyo remaining this drawing force right now, and Hyo, those two still feeling kind of like adrift and are doing teaming against each other and teaming with each other, but they're basically hanging around Ultimo Dragon. And I look at that and I go, like, maybe if you're actually doing things with like Hyo, maybe it would not just be 1,105 fans.
I thought this was the weakest Cork and Hall show since probably last June when they did the double shot and sort of right. split up one really good card into two. I was not wild about this show. You know, I thought the main event was excellent, but I also thought the main event was a tad lower than it should have been. There were some weird blemishes, some weird...
It was slow.
Yeah, you know, the botch would not be the right term, but that main event didn't have the polish that you would expect from a Dragon Gate main event. And ultimately, like, if this were any other promotion, I'm not sure it would matter, but when you have Shun Skywalker, you know, take an extra half a step while running the ropes, or when Ben K and Yamato are having a sequence and it doesn't feel like they're hitting the ropes at 100 miles an hour, that stuff is really distracting in Dragon Gate. I'm not sure it would be if it were any other promotion, but a 6-man tag main event, Cork and Hall Dragon Gate, you expect a certain level of speed and intensity. And that main event, although I did think it was great, it didn't hit the level that it should have been. We'll talk about it when we get to it. The Don Fuji Ishin stuff, I was not into. I might be out. I might be alone on that. I was not into that. We'll talk about match 5, Kame and Rita. I have thoughts on that as well. But this was a show that was kind of dominated, I thought, by the Mochizuki Dojo kids and Mochizuki Jr.
Yeah.
And then a main event, which had a super hot angle. And, you know, I feel much better about the state of Dragon Gate when we know leaving one Cork and what we're going to get on the next one. I would have preferred, coming out of the Rey de Parejas announcement, some match cards. I would really like to know that sort of stuff. We don't have that yet, but we at least know that Yoshioka is going to be back in March, which is quite exciting. But yeah, this was a show that I did not love, to say the least.
I think I was a little bit higher. I think that's also because I did enjoy Don Fuji at a referee, but we'll talk about that was not without some misgivings about the match itself and the role of the referees in that match. I think that there is, and this might not be the real time for us to really delve into it, Case, but you compare, let's take the last 90 days of Dragon Gate and let's look at what they've done in Tokyo. I think that there's an argument to be made, and some of the reactions to that second December Corcoran was about, a lack of polish maybe can be talked about, especially when you talked about like the main event and what everyone's mind eye is a Dragon System 6-man special main event. And you compare that to like one of my bigger issues about that 3-way 6-man back in December was like, yeah, they are doing Dragon Gate things, but it's not done necessarily with like a level of polish that I was expecting. And it was the same case on that card with the Mexico versus Japan tag, I felt like. And maybe there is something to be said about how Dragon Gate is evolving, and maybe with how people come in and out of the mix, that now it seems like that this main event, like I was 4-flat on it, and there was good work there, but we're talking about 22-minute main event that had a lot. It took a lot of time to get going, and even when it got going and got to your sprint or flow phase of the match, it just never necessarily, in my mind, got to that level. But you still had some, like Shun Skywalker and Benkei had some incredible performances in that match. But I think when you like take it as a whole, maybe there is a topic to be said about how 2025 modern day Dragon Gate doesn't necessarily have the polish that it once did.
I wouldn't go that far. I thought this was a match specific issue that could have been as simple as the turnbuckles got loose and the ropes were weird, because I specifically noticed rope running issues that just don't happen in Dragon Gate.
And Dio was doing a lot of pre-match like rope tests.
Yeah, I think, and this is, I mean, this feels very tinfoil hat to say, so right, I apologize in advance. I just think the ropes might have been loose, but Shun slipped on the ropes. Ben and Yamato went super, super slow on one sequence of the ropes. There were just a lot of rope-related things that don't happen in Dragon Gate typically that happened in this match. Now, I was 4.25 on it, but without those rope issues, I'm probably at 4.5. I thought that match was phenomenal. KZ, big match guy. I mean, what else is new there? Shun, Ben, Yamato, everybody but Kota Minoura, really, really good at that match. Funny how that works. But
hey, Kota Minoura took the final sequence of CDJ into an impact. He took it all in his head like a champ. We got to give him a little bit credit for that.
I will give him credit for that. You know, big picture, again, freaked out is not the right word, and it's not like I have any personal investment in how many people are coming to Dragon Gate shows. You know, I've enjoyed cold promotions. Obviously, there are promotions that are red hot that I'm not interested in. Normally, the amount of people in the building doesn't necessarily change the way I view a promotion, but we're coming up on a point where the Yamato stuff, I just don't think is making the splash that they would have hoped it would. Now, that being said, Paradox, I think, is still a winning unit that has done tremendous things. We talked about D-Courage and how good they are. Natural Vibes, always a bit of an asterisk there, as long as Strong Machine J is going to be their leader, but I think they are doing good enough work. And Gold Class, you know, I have nothing bad to say about those guys. And Z-Brats, again, it's a little bit complicated. So many guys in that unit. So many guys that I enjoy. I don't always love the way that they are used, but this is still a promotion that I think is incredibly, incredibly strong. But between some of the box office stuff and this Cork and Hall show, that was fine, you know, but Dragon Gate hasn't had fine Cork and Hall shows in quite a while. It's something to note here.
Yeah, and maybe my point about polish is me trying to look at unconnected data points and trying to plot a line between them when there actually is not there. And as you're saying, like the ring thing, because I did definitely notice before D-Courage versus Gold Class, I did notice it seemed like Dio was really like playing around with the ropes and checking, like doing like bounces off the bottom rope in a way that I've never really noticed him doing before. So there might be some credence there.
Yeah, very much so. But we end that show with Yuki Yoshioka coming back. I wanna get into this now. Obviously, there's a there's a Rey de Parejas conversation to have in a little bit, but the Rey de Parejas announcement came at intermission. They announced the A block and the B block again. We'll break that down after we talk about Cork and Hall. But the original pairing for the D Courage team was Kakuta and Daya. And then Yoshioka comes back and, you know, gives Kakuta the boot and says, we're going to do the original D Courage team. It's going to be me and Daya and Rey de Parejas, if that's cool with everybody. Do you think this is the start of something, or do we think this is just, hey, we wanted a way to get Yuki Yoshioka in this tournament. There's no angle here. It's just a way for Yoshioka to wrestle in this tournament.
I mean, it's Yoshioka. I'm sorry, Yuki Yoshioka teaming with his like pair tag team partner that was the overwhelming storyline of the last 3 years. Like, yeah. I think there's a lot of good reason, and I think that was like a nice like deft hand doing kind of sucking in there. I do kind of like was left thinking a little bit after the show, and just like I feel like my mind, maybe a little bit more than yours, I always am thinking about what's the next turn going to be, like what's the next like beat going to happen, and what twist can happen. And it did feel like maybe a little bit of, huh, maybe is Kakuta really super happy about this, because he was the one who essentially had to pick up Yoshioka's slack last year. You know, like it does seem like if you want to go in that direction for Kakuta, and you're looking at like what future landscapes might be and how like the overwhelming like power, like if you want to talk about like people and like their position on the cards and powers, now D-Courage with Yoshioka back instantly becomes one of the most top loaded units in the company, because you have Yoshioka coming back, Reiwa Big Six, former Dreamgate champion, former King of Gate winner, has won everything that his weight class has let him be in the company. You have Dragon Daya, who had that 2024 with such big success. And then you also have Kakuta there. He does kind of feel like the piece that if you wanted to move someone out, he would be the person to move out, right?
Yeah, you know, I don't see Kakuta going back into Zebrats, just because...
Not really, nah.
Yeah, you know, he was an RED guy, and then when he returned, RED had gone away, Zebrats had formed, and so he was never really a member of that unit, but... Well, I guess...
But the guys that he was really affiliated with were no longer in Zebrats at that time.
Thank you, like, that's what, yeah. I was... In my head, he and Shun Skywalker had... They haven't been in the same unit. I mean, Kakuta turned against him, but I guess that certainly becomes a possibility, you know, as does Kakuta even just moving to gold class, probably not natural vibes and probably not paradox, but Kakuta leaving creates a very interesting scenario. There's also always the possibility of, you know, Kakuta, Monte, and Hyo, and I don't know, Punch or whoever else, forming a unit of their own. So we'll have to see there.
Ryu. Yeah.
Monday Ryu, yeah.
He's been tagging with Hyo a lot.
He is, yeah. Hyo's doing his own thing right now. Look, I don't see the start of any sort of big angle here with Yoshioka and Kakuta. I think what they have is what they have. If anything, I've been saying this now for almost 3 years. I'm way more interested in a Yoshioka heel turn,
yeah.
I mean, the bummer is that Yoshioka and Jason should be teaming together. Yoshioka could get you everything that you want out of Coach Minora, and he could do it in such a more efficient manner. And so,
and cut a promo. And yeah.
I think that is really what I'm looking for, and I don't know if it'll ever happen. I at some point would desperately like to see Shun and Yoshioka hold the Twin Gate belts again. I've been talking about that for 3 years now. So maybe at the end of Rey de Parejas, you know, the tournament is ending in Kobe this year, which is interesting. It's ending on the March Kobe, not the April Korakuen show. And by the way, I did warn everybody that we likely would not see a lot of Rey de Parejas this year. Unfortunately, I was right, but this could be a deal where maybe Daya and Yoshioka go to the finals, and maybe Yoshioka does to Daya what Jason did to Jackie last year, and all of a sudden we have another heel turn in Kobe for Rey de Parejas.
Yeah, and I just think that there's just a lot more interesting things you can do in this company now he's back. Because who is the one member of the Reiwa Big Six case who has a Dreamgate victory over Yamato?
Yuki Yoshioka.
Yeah. So, I mean, now, if we were going to talk about what would be your ideal Kobe World main event, I'm sorry, Shun Skywalker, but I think it is. And we have to see how the Yoshioka returns are, to be fair. Like, I am really putting the cart ahead of the horse here. But I think there's something there that you, there might be an attitude to go, oh, Yamato versus Yoshioka. Yoshioka is the one who overcomes the wall. And then, hey, now Yamato has one person he's 0-2 in Dreamgate matches with. And you can have that being an ongoing thing for the remainder of really Yamato's career. Like, there's so much opportunity what you might be able to do with Yuki Yoshioka returning to the company.
Right now, February 6th, does Yamato versus Yoshioka feel like a possible Kobe World main event?
To me, very much so. Mm-hmm. I would almost put that as the favorite now.
Well, I would too, because, you know, as for the main event, Strong Machine J had to be pulled from this show due to a shoulder injury, so KZ took his place, and then KZ beat up Coach Minora in dramatic fashion in the finishing stretch and won the match. At this point, I would lean, because I have no idea what they're doing in Osaka in March. The second show is going to be the kickoff of Rey de Parejas, which is nice because we get a second show or a bonus show that's going to actually make tape. But I don't get the impression Yamato's going to defend the belt in Osaka, which is going to be very weird. But Yamato versus KZ now feels like a real possibility for Dead or Alive. I could see them heating up KZ for that event. I would be quite excited about that. And then from there, you could parlay that into maybe a June defense and then maybe Yoshioka at World. That to me seems like the direction they're going to head right now.
Yeah, it just seems like that you added in KZ there and you have the added dynamic of does. And I thought that Jay and Ho-Ho did a great job about this on commentary. Pardon me. But Jay and Ho talking about commentary, the fact that Ben was not necessarily happy that KZ got added into this match. So now you have like this another figure kind of popping up there. And especially someone like KZ, you're very easily, I think it's very easy to put him in to a Dead or Alive title defense. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, you know, that feels like the thing, because I think we're going to get a cage match this year. I feel like, I was thinking about this when I was walking my dog yesterday, that 2021 Dead or Alive, we all had the feeling months before it even happened that Kento was losing his hair that year. And then by the time we got to Dead or Alive, it was like minus 10,000 on the Dragon Gate DraftKings account that Kento was going to lose his hair. I feel very, very strongly right now that if they do a cage match this year, Ishin is the one losing his hair. It's too soon for Hamare. He's not over enough to where it will truly have the impact that it needs to. Ishin feels like he is at the exact right spot, but I also don't really see Yamato factoring into a cage match at this point. I still feel like they would want to go Dreamgate match and cage match on that show. And Yamato versus KZ feels like the right one because it doesn't burn Yamato versus a young guy. It's a match that in theory you would have to do. It's two stars that are big enough to headline, or at least on this show, semi-headline that show. And if they weren't going in that direction, I don't know why they would give KZ the win in this Korakuen main event. Now, it could be in Osaka. That'd be a fantastic match to watch in Osaka number two. I would love that. But again, I don't know what they're doing. Their schedule is so dramatically different this year than it ever has been. And so right now, I would pencil in Yamato versus KZ for Dead or Alive.
Yeah, and I think that when you like look at their last, the last real big show in that building, having both a title match and a cage match does seem to be something, especially for a crowd case that we know Aichi Nagoya does have views about that card and what they want on their card,
which is a cage match.
Yeah, absolutely. But that was the main event. Working our way back, and this is probably the one time we'll really talk about Kyoto case. The semi-main event was Paradox, Susumu Yokosuka, Kagetora, BB Hulk, and Aruki Doi versus Z-Bratz, Kai, Jason Lee, Yoshiki, Kato, and Hamare. Time to talk about the other things that happened in Kyoto. So in Kyoto, there was a huge kerfuffle in the main event that led Ishin, who was not a part of it, giving a choke slam to Kachi-san on the outside. There was an absolute schmoz, and then basically Yagi had to go put down the ice cream and run in from the back to count the three count. And because of that, and all of the hullabaloo around it, and Z-Bratz wanting a Paradox Triangle Gate match, GM Ryo Saito issued certain things for this match here. First off, if Z-Bratz won, they would be able to have any Z-Bratz combination versus Paradox for the Triangle Gate. However, there's going to be some referee stakes because GM Ryo Saito did not want to put his referees into harm's way once again. And for quite frankly, needed a referee that was going to stand up to all the shenanigans there. So throughout the show, they were alluding to that the referee was not necessarily there. But if something were to happen to those referees, both Z-Bratz and Paradox had their own sub that would fill in from the outside. It was Ishin and Dragon Kid. And it, lo and behold, who was the special guest referee? Well, it was Don Fuji as Shiro Fuji, imitating Shiro Abe of classic All Japan's women wrestling. And case, this turned into like a out and out Dragon Gate, like heel versus face, like mayhem match that was happening around Don Fuji doing comedy referee gimmick.
So I loved the Kyoto match. That was the 10-man tag, Ishin, Kai, Minoru, Shun, and Kato against Kagetora Doi, Susumu, Yamato, and Hulk. I thought the structure of that match was really interesting because it was a lot of crowd brawling, but every time they went to the floor to brawl, it felt like it was building to where when they got back in the ring, it was particularly explosive and particularly exciting. So I thought they really hit on something with that match, and it made me excited for this Korakuen match. And then I thought they missed the mark with this. This match to me was a mess. It was too distracting between Fuji and Ishin and Dragon Kid. I just felt like the in-ring never got settled. I saw the Fuji thing with Ichikawa versus Dump Matsumoto in November, and look, maybe I would have a greater appreciation for it if I was into 80s Joshi wrestling, which there's nothing wrong with, but it's not my thing. I have very little historical knowledge of it. So the Fuji thing the second time around was just, to me, a complete distraction from a series of matches that I've greatly enjoyed. Again, I continue to talk about how I think Paradox has held up their end of the bargain way more so than I ever thought they would for a unit full of old guys. This match, to me, I just thought it was disjointed. I thought it was a mess. I did like the finish with Ishin getting powdered in the eyes and then counting the pinfall for Susumu, thinking it was a Z-Bratz guy, but this was a major miss for me.
I think I liked it a good deal more, but if you took the Don Fuji comedy referee out and still had Ishin and Dragon Kid as the sub refs and go, well, Kashi, you're eating another chokeslam here, and because the refs need to get involved there, I feel like that would have accomplished it a lot better. To be quite honest, it just was just completely, tonally, like, incongruous with like, the match and the feud that was happening. You could still have Ishin and Dragon Kid get involved there. And I felt like that when you had the ref scuffle, and especially the reaction to Dragon Kid getting involved and getting hands put on him, you got the reaction you wanted, but you did not need to have all the Don Fuji histrionics around it.
Yeah, and it was you know, made worse by the fact that we had the Ishin Don Fuji match earlier in the show, which I thought was a fine little TV brawl in it with the DQ, but
a great top rope knee drop.
Great top rope knee drop, I'll give him that. You know, that was very good. I don't know if they're making a thing out of Ishin coming out of different entry points in Korakuen Hall now, because last month he snuck out from the stands. This time around, he comes out from a neutral corner and attacks Don Fuji. It feels like they might be making a thing out of that, which I'm okay with if they are. You know, I am certainly a little bit afraid of the amount of goofiness that Ishin is portraying right now. But to have the singles match that ends with the DQ earlier in the show, I don't really feel like we got anywhere with the Ishin Fuji story or with the Z-Bratz Paradox story in this match. This was just a lot of stuff happening, and I'm not sure it advanced anything, with the one caveat being that, of course, Dragon Kid was involved in this match. Dragon Kid is showing up at more and more shows. He doesn't have the neck brace. I would say I feel very strongly, based on some information that I have, that Yoshioka will obviously be returning in March. I would assume at this point that Dragon Kid will be back at the April Korakuen. That is not an official report, But from the information that I have gathered by talking to somebody this past week, I would assume that is when Dragon Kid is back. Could be wrong, but that is kind of where I've got him in my mind now.
Yeah, and it definitely, leading into the weekend with a five-match Kyoto show, did definitely, I know I brought that up, going like, hey, does feel like a situation where Dragon Kid returns and you make that a new main event and you get six matches out of there. But, I mean, he's doing physical contact. From what you've said and like that information, yeah, I fully believe that maybe, I don't know if he's going to make like a surprise, like, oh, hey, guess who's in Hakata? It's Dragon Kid. But by the time the April Corkin happens, I anticipate him being back. Yeah.
So let me ask you this, just to make sure that I have this right. Had Zebrats won this match, they would have been able to create any sort of trio they wanted to challenge for those Triangle Gate belts, right?
Correct. They would have had free reign, whereas usually it's the person who gets the fall selecting the two things. They could go into the brain trust and say, hey, Shun and Minoru were not a part of this match. We want them in there, and we're bringing back Johnny Valletta for it. They could have, yes.
Yeah, this feels really messy, given that later this month you have Memorial Gate, which is a show that I guess realistically could be headlined by a Triangle Gate match. And then you And then you have that first Osaka show where, again, we don't really know what that's going to be. The second Osaka show is going to be Rey de Pareja, so they don't really have to worry about any of that in March. And then they'll come out of April. I don't, that feels sloppy. It feels like we could have just paid all this off by Zebrats winning and then setting up a Memorial Gate match.
Right. And that immediately, given the amount of TV we have in Hakata, let me see. I had the cards for Hakata a couple minutes ago, but it, oh, okay, here we go. We have Paradox versus Zebrats, Kai, Jason Lee, Kato, and Hamare. I think that, and it's also going to have Dragon Kid and, I'm reading the card from that show. That was, I scrolled too far down the cards case for it. But all right, looking at what we have in Hakata, it will be on next Tuesday. It does kind of feel like that you have like a main event on one of the shows that is Gold Class versus Zebrats, but the semi-main event is the champion Triangle Gate team against Kai, Ishin, and Kato. So that tells me that they might be able to make a Triangle Gate match out of that, but it just doesn't feel as clean as it could have been happening at Corkin.
Yeah, so that's the second show on the 11th. That's the night show that you said semi-main event, Hulk, Susumu, and Kagetora against Kai, Ishin, and Kato, which, yeah, again, you know, Ishin could pin Kato, and that could be your Memorial Gate, Triangle Gate match. That just feels like a completely unnecessary step.
For a limited time at Verizon, you can get our best price ever for a single line. Just $45 per month when you bring your phone, which is less than you spend on too tired to cook takeout every week. Get one line on unlimited welcome for $45 per month with AutoPay plus taxes and fees. Visit your local Cleveland Verizon store by April 2nd to save. $20 monthly promo credits applied over 36 months with a new line on unlimited welcome. In times of congestion, unlimited 5G and 4G LTE may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Domestic data roaming at 2G speeds. Additional terms apply. For a limited time at Verizon, you can get our best price ever for a single line. Just $45 per month when you bring your phone, which is less than you spend on too tired to cook takeout every week. Get one line on unlimited welcome for $45 per month with AutoPay plus taxes and fees. Visit your local Cleveland Verizon store by April 2nd to save. $20 monthly promo credits applied over 36 months with a new line on unlimited welcome. In times of congestion, unlimited 5G and 4G LTE may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Domestic data roaming at 2G speeds. Additional terms apply.
No, I'm with you on that. It felt like you could have made the match based off of what happened in Tokyo. You know, it just seems like then you're just having less time to promote the match, even though they've kind of been promoting the feud there. Do you have anything else on the semi-main event?
I do not.
The pre-intermission tag was D-Courage versus Gold Class, Dragon Diane Ryoya Tanaka versus Rita and Jackie Kamei. It was a JFK into the re-tanic on Tanaka getting the win for Gold Class. I thought that this was good, but a shade off of the previous work we've seen from both these teams.
So here's the thing with this match, and I very rarely ever do this when it comes to reviewing a Cork and Hall show, but I'm going to have to rewatch this match because I thought it was a complete nothing. I thought it was like the worst possible match that these four guys could have had. Not that it was bad, I thought it was painfully boring. I didn't think they did anything worthwhile in this match, but I am so on an island, and I've seen so many other people say that they really enjoyed this match, that I must have missed something. And so my written review will be on voiceofwrestling.com on Monday, because I'm not going to have it done by the end of Friday. We don't publish on the weekends, or at least I don't publish my reviews on the weekend. So it'll be up on Monday. I will rewatch this match before my review is published, because I am convinced that this was like a 2 3/4 star match where these guys did nothing exciting whatsoever. But I am so far in the minority here that I'm willing to give this another chance.
Yeah, I was 3 3/4. I thought this was very good, but shades off of their previous work. But for me, this match really was the idea that at least the combination of Dai and Tanaka did not have answers for anything that Rita and Kamei have done, and especially them kind of coming together over the last month. And that was kind of my opinion of this match. And I was spoiled about Yoshioka and all of and the Rey de Parejas lineups when I watched it. But I just kind of looked at it from that kind of guys where I thought that Rita had a really kind of strong performance, but the overall storyline was Kamei in his gold class overalls. Finally, him and Rita seemed to be one of the teams with momentum going into the tournament.
Yeah, you see, it wasn't that hard to get Kamei new gear that didn't look absolutely awful. I like his new gear.
Yeah, I mean, all you had to go do is go buy a new pair of overalls and give KZ a paint pen.
It worked out nicely. That I will say that is the best thing I can say about this match so far, is that Kamei has new gear and it looks very good.
In a match we don't need to spend a lot of time on, Ultimo, Luis Monte, and UT teamed up against Hyo, Genki Horiguchi, and Monday Ryu. This match got all turned around because of the Strong Machine J absence. It was a triple submission, but the one that counted was the gory special on Ryu for the Lucha Libre side to win.
Mike, that's all I have to say about that match.
You know what match I have a lot to say about?
Please go ahead, because I do as well.
My match of the night, Daiki Yanagiuchi versus Mochizuki Jr. Mochizuki Jr. wins with a bridging German suplex. And my God, Daiki Yanagiuchi, we knew that this building was always special for him. This was like the real, like, okay, you have something in this building with this guy, Matt.
So we obviously don't have the Rey de Parejas lineups at this point. I was hoping they would be out by this time. Instead, we just have the teams. And I feel like now is the time. You have to do next month the Daiki and Fuda versus Kato and Ishin tag, where Daiki rolls up Kato and gets the first win of his career 2 years after his debut, that would be.
Good news, Case, for the matches that they didn't announce for this Korakuen, we do have Fuda and Daiki versus Ishin and Kato.
Did they announce that?
Yeah, we have at least the Korakuen matches.
Wait, where's that? I haven't seen that. Where's that at?
It was on, this might not be from the Gaora result, but this is from Pure Esso Spirit.
Oh, really? Okay, hold on. I didn't see this. And also, while I'm looking for this, can I make a formal complaint about Blue Sky really quick?
Oh, absolutely. Please do. Go ahead.
Okay, so I made a Blue Sky. I'm not happy about it, mainly because
I didn't know you made a Blue Sky.
So here's the thing. I'm not following you, and don't follow me. No one follow me.
Yeah, no, that's fair. Are you keeping this shoot?
No, not even that. I'm anti-Blue Sky. I'm anti-Blue Sky in part one. Not that Twitter is anything good. It's very bad. The man who runs it is a Nazi. Very bad guy.
Your decision about Blue Sky is not reflective of your opinion on the Everything app.
No, not at all. Because my brother, my shoot brother, who almost never comes up on the show, is very... He got banned from Twitter for, I think, threatening Elon Musk. So he got banned.
I did not know this. You rarely bring up your brother. He was threatening Elon Musk and got banned.
Yes. So he is on Blue Sky. In his mind, he is on Blue Sky to defend the nation of America. And he thinks that that Blue Sky is the good people app, which, again, no dog in the fight. I obviously, fuck Elon Musk. I wish he was dead. But
sure.
you know, he is so self-righteous about it. It is so, quite frankly, and I love him to death, he is so annoying about Blue Sky that I was like, I already didn't want to be on this app. I'm never going to make a fucking account. Fuck this. Mm-hmm. But Jay is on Blue Sky and Alan is on Blue Sky. So I made a Blue Sky account to follow Jay and to follow Alan, because Alan was uploading podcasts that I wasn't seeing, because I normally just see him on Twitter, but he's not posting the links there anymore. So I was like, all right.
Yeah, he's off Twitter.
Yeah, I don't want to miss the Alan links. And the torch is always, I don't know, the torch is always weird on my Apple feed. Sometimes it doesn't let me play episodes. The whole mm-hmm. thing. Made a Blue Sky account with this sole intention of never looking at it and just turning on notifications for Jay and for Alan, and it won't let me do notifications.
Oh, that's hell.
What is it? What the fuck is that? Sorry to swear, but like, why can't I turn on notifications on Blue Sky? Just let me see when Alan posts and when Jay posts, and otherwise I will never use the app.
Yeah, you don't need my posts, which are almost all automated by and large.
Mike, love you to death. No interest in what you post on Blue Sky. Do not want to see it.
All it is the exact. I have the bot set up that if I tweet anything from Blue Sky with the Dragon Gate hashtag, it immediately goes to Twitter. My only participation on these sites now are DMs, basically. Don't get any ideas about that.
Yeah.
But yeah.
No, I am so disappointed that I can't set notifications. I just want to see when those two guys post. That's all I'm interested in. And I can't seem to do that, which is just absolutely maddening. Now, I bring that up because I thought maybe Jay had posted these matches on Blue Sky and I missed them, but he hadn't. But I am now seeing on Puroso Spirit, March 4th in Corken Hall, Fuda and Daiki versus Ishin and Kato, Yoshioka and Daya versus Minoru and Jason, Ben K and Mochizuki Jr. versus Masaki Mochizuki and Akahiro Sahara. Put a pin in that. We have stuff to say about that. And then Hyo and Jiro against Yamato and Hulk. That is a very fun group of matches.
Yeah, if this ends up being the kickoff show, I'm already like circling this in my notebook as a show of the year contender. Now, just because that.
I thought they were kicking off this tournament in Osaka on that second night. Am I wrong about that?
They might be. I think they are kicking it off in Osaka that
second
night.
Hold on. Let me fire up Blue Sky. The tag league is running from March 1st
That's for second night in Osaka.
Yeah, so March 1st until March 30th. And as I pull up my handy-dandy Dragon Gate schedule here, that's actually the first night. So maybe both of those Osaka shows are Rey de Pareja shows, and they're not doing any form of Champion Gate in March.
Man, I feel like they need to have, unless, and this would be such a surprise, and unless Memorial Gate is suddenly 2020 again, Case, where's your tent pole, your tent pole show? Because that was always the thing that you had, things being built into March, because now without having Champion Gate, unless something is to happen with that April Corquin, you really don't have anything that you want to like build a bigger card around until Aichi.
I guess the counterpoint to that is the tournament is ending on the 30th in Kobe, and with Yamato and the B block, let's see who's there. So the B block is Mochizuki and Sahara, Skywalker and Hamari, Ben and Jr., KZ and Strong Machine J, Yamato and Hulk, and then Hyo and Eichmann. So of that group, Mochizuki could pin Yamato, Skywalker could pin Yamato, Jr. would be really, it would be awesome to see him pin Yamato, or KZ, or I guess even Hyo, and they could, I guess, challenge Yamato for a Dreamgate match at the April Corken. That all feels very possible.
Mochizuki Jr. might be a little soon, but the rest of them, and yeah, Shun still has the one-on-one banked, if he so decided to care about those sorts of things instead of Quest.
Yeah, interesting. Okay, that's good to know. I mean, look, that's fascinating. If Puroso Spirit is right, and I have no reason to believe that they're not, I don't see that listed anywhere else, but that website's been around forever. I use that website every day. I would assume that those matches are right. those are big matches if they're still going to kick off the tournament in Osaka.
Yeah.
Because that B block especially, I mean, it's, you know, Sahara, Hamare Jr. and Eichmann are, I mean, they're, you know, Eichmann is a main eventer, but not a Dragon Gate main eventer. That's a really young block of guys. I'd be really curious to see what they headline in Osaka with that.
Yeah. So I'm going through their most recent Gaora posts. They don't have anything about those matches. So it's solely on Strong Style Spirit. But if that's the case, those are the four matches that should be happening there.
With no Yoshioka and Osaka either, unless they're throwing us a big curveball. So that would take out, because you could easily headline one of those Osaka shows with Yoshioka and Daya versus Yokosuka and Kagetora, but it feels like maybe even that's off the table now.
Or beat down with another like non-tournament match, and suddenly, okay, D-Courage versus Z-Brats.
That's true. That is true. Okay, yeah, I don't know what they're going to do. That's very interesting. That has unfortunately taken us away from talking about Daiki versus Junior. Mike, I will hand it back to you. You have the floor on this match.
This match fucking rocked from the blocked Gucci rocket to Gucci just taking kicks to the face nonstop. All the near falls towards the end of the match for Daiki were getting huge pops. Junior gets to play vet, which is a lot of fun seeing this. He's going to be a real fun dick to younger wrestlers as he gets older. And then you get Mochizuki doing the over. He basically catches Daiki twice going for German suplex. He catches them high on both of them. The bridging German, he kind of lays out in it. It was just fucking sick. I went four on it.
I am not as high on it as you, but I did love this match. And I find the continued evolution of Daiki Yanagiuchi without really evolving his character. You know, right before we started recording, I just finished my thoughts on this match, and I wrote a lot about how Daiki for 2 years now has been a plucky underdog loser, and that has never changed. Now, his status in losing has changed, you know, slightly along the way. He's garnered a little bit more respect as time has gone on, especially over the last 6 months, but he's still the same guy that came into Korakuen 2 years ago and got his ass beat by Don Fuji. But you see here that this is a guy who is not the most technically proficient guy on the roster, will likely never be a big star on this roster, but is just a really, really good pro wrestler, especially for where he's at in his career. And I made the note in my written review that, you know, we have 11 months left in the year. We're going to see a lot of wrestlers do great things. A lot of wrestlers develop deep resumes. And guys that we don't even know about yet or would never expect to are going to have stellar years. But through 1 month, there are very few wrestlers that I think have impacted wrestling in a more positive way in 2025 than Daiki Yanagiuchi. And if I had to submit, you know, my SFM 50 or even my SFM 15 for the month of January, it would have Daiki Yanagiuchi on that list.
Yeah, and I would say that I know we are a couple months away from balloting and stuff like this. If he continues to have a 2025 that he's had so far in January into February, he will be appearing on my 30 under 30 list just because he has really made that step. And you're right, without any real character evolution other than, you know, generational rivalries. I mean, he's still very much still on that first step in his career. And we've had like discussion time after time, like, is it time for Daiki? Is it time for Daiki? It just feels like that they've been managed to really tease it out and make it to such a point where they did not give his first like consequence into a fall to a Korakuen Hall. They already was like, oh yeah, no, he has won matches. He's just never scored the fall, been the person like officially in scoring that fall yet. And it just really sets itself up beautifully for him to end his second year, finally getting that win in that tag match. But I just thought that this was just a real fun performance from both guys. And Junior getting to play vet, I want to kind of go back to that. You're getting to see more sides to Mochizuki Junior that we have not seen. And really, after returning from excursion, coming back immediately joining Gold Class, we've seen him work so well within Gold Class as him where he was then. We're starting to see new facets to this guy's game that I think is just going to pay off dividends down the road.
So, you know, I'm so curious about what they do with him because I'm not sure if they will ever fully lean into Mochizuki Jr. feuding with the Mochizuki Dojo guys. Right now, it feels like it's this very subtle undercard thing, and nobody wants to make that big of a deal about it. But Jay did such a great job on commentary, noting that, you know, when Junior was teaming with his dad, he just wanted to get away from his dad. Now you have some of Junior's contemporaries who have turned to Masaki Mochizuki for guidance. And it just creates an interesting dynamic when you see Junior kicking away at the life of Daiki Yanagiuchi, and Masaki Mochizuki is at ringside, but he's seconding Daiki and not Junior. There's something about that that is just profoundly interesting to me. And so I really hope they continue to explore Junior versus Daiki, Junior versus Fuda, and Junior versus Sahara, until eventually we get the third match in that series of Mochizuki Jr. versus his father. But I'm very, very entertained by that right now, even if I don't know if I don't think Dragon Gate is making a big deal out of it, but it's certainly something that is on my radar.
Yeah, and you even have little aspects of that, like on the Kyoto show where it was Gold Class versus Mochizuki Dojo in the opener, and you get little shades of like Junior kicking his dad to break up pens and stuff like that. That they always, the one thing that we could always say about Mochizuki Jr., they keep all of his stuff at mind, even if it's not like this overwhelming like push at any point. Like the beauty of having him, and especially him at this stage, and how they treated him over the first 4 years of his career, really, Case. I mean, he has been like enmeshed as well as any young guy could be. And I know part of that is that he gets the Nepo baby benefit a little bit with his dad, but it is really kind of cool to see someone with his contemporaries kind of feuding it out a little bit. But you also have the aspect of, okay, he is higher up on the card, he's in a unit and all of that. I think it makes it one of the more compelling watches on the roster right now.
I don't think if he was less talented that he would still be given the spotlight that he's given. I mean, it'll be 3 years for him this June. So he's been in the company for 2.5 years. And as I always say, he's been handled with such care. You know, he's always doing something. He always has something to latch on to. But I think that's just because he's as talented as he is. I think he has officially outgrown any sort of genuine Nepo baby allegations.
Sure.
Because he's just a great wrestler. He is really, really good.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's you get on third, but the reason why he's been able to score is his own talent.
That's a very good way of putting it. And again, I am so impressed by the fact that he just always seems to stumble into doing one of the most interesting things on the roster. And now we're going to see him in Rey de Parejas. He's set up to win there. I'm quite excited to see what comes of that. I really, you know, again, 30 under 30 is coming up. I can't imagine there's going to be 10 wrestlers under the age of 30 that I think more highly of than Junior. So he's in the driver's seat right now. I can't wait to see what he does. It's, you know, Ben K and Mochizuki Jr. in Rey de Parejas, and I am all about that.
So before that, we had the aforementioned Don Fuji versus Ishin match. It was Ishin coming out from the neutral corner, Don Fuji insulting Ishin's mom in the crowd, and then a great top rope knee drop, and then Don Fuji gets DQ'd for kicking too much ass slash throwing Kachi-san out of the ring.
Yeah, I've said my piece on this. Wasn't for me.
The opener, Masaki Mochizuki, Ryo Fudo, and Akihiro Sahara versus the vets and Punch Nobunaga. It's Toru Owashi with Tsuji Kondo. We got to have the exchange of Lanzarses. However, it was Punch Clutch coming out of Sahara's second Lanzarse attempt, getting the win for the veteran side.
So it's always incredibly rewarding when you follow the promotion as closely as people like you or I do, or you've just been a longtime fan, to see the cycle of a Dragon Gate rookie, you know, to see them come in as somebody with potential, but a lot of raw skills that had yet to be molded, and then to see them find their footing, and then all of a sudden they're good, and then ideally at some point they become great. And Sahara is the new rookie obsession. I'm blown away by how quickly he has progressed. And look, he is still so much of a work in progress. He does not have the polish that you would need to be a successful Dragon Gate full-time wrestler. He does not have the charisma yet, but is certainly working his way there. But the growth of Sahara over the last even 3 months, if you just want to go back to November, is absolutely astounding. And when we talked about Fuda last year, you know, I always said to you, I don't want Fuda to be anywhere near either of the Mochizukis because they are just better versions of Fuda. I was not expecting, as Mochizuki Dojo formed, for not only Fuda to be outshined by Masaki Mochizuki, which I expected, but Daiki Yanagiuchi because of the fire and charisma of Daiki. But now Akihiro Sahara has lapped Ryu Fuda. It is not even close. Sahara jumped off the screen, not only with Shuji Kondo, but with Punch Tamanaga, of all people, in this match. And Fuda, once again, a complete and utter afterthought.
Yeah, I mean, the story of the match was Sahara getting to face off against the old big boys and then learning, hey, I could take some of these guys, some of these moves these guys have, and then just like taking from his finish, or what would have been like his big move, has been the spine buster. So it's only natural that a move like Lanzarse becomes something that he should pull out, and him hitting it on Kondo and just seeing like the aspect of, hey, I can hit this move now. I can hit this move. And then the like the rookie thing of like, Case, I know that this might be the age difference here. How much wrestling video games did you ever play?
The SmackDown versus Raw games.
You know how it feels when like you find your guy and it's like very easy to go do like one move that the AI just cannot handle and you just start spamming it in a wrestling game?
Yeah.
Like Sahara in a match discovered, hey, I could do this move. And that was such a cool thing to see in the match.
No, he's so exciting, you know, because they don't really have anybody like this. Again, you know, your comps really, it's not Ben. You know, Ben was never quite this. It really is, he's a younger version of Kondo and Awashi, and he is just excelling at such a quick rate. Again, a long ways to go. A guy that probably, you know, a few months away, probably would not be in my 30 under 30, just because I actually think over the last year, that talent pool has been restocked quite a bit.
Mm-hmm.
But that's somebody fair. That yeah. I'm still, like, I am so into the Sahara matches on every show now. He has kind of become the guy, you know, we know Mochizuki Jr. now is going to be on every card. I don't need to worry about what he's doing. You know, Rita, again, full-time guy, he's going to be on every show. Sahara has become the young guy, even more so than Homare, just because of the way that he's used, that I'm like, all right, let's see what Sahara's doing. What he's going to have an opening trios match. It's going to be awesome. All right, sign me up.
Yeah, it's like, congratulations, Akihiro Sahara. You have joined the Open the Voice Gate list of rookie guys that we get obsessed with.
That is an interesting list. Let me go back. I want to play around with that for a second, because if you go back to 2016,
Hio, I was a Hio guy.
Wow. Okay. That's I was gonna say Ben.
Oh no! I was a Hio guy way in front of like a decade before Hio mattered.
That this is true. We were the only two. I mean, it goes back to 5 years ago, Jay making fun of us on this podcast for being into Hio, and now he is where he's at. But okay, so let's just throw Ben, Shun, and Hio into one pot, because we were all very excited about the class of 2016. I would say Minoru definitely had that. Kento and Kame had that. Sora Fujikawa, in the three matches we saw of him, was very close to joining that list. And then it would be
the Ahashi split.
Yeah, but we weren't obsessed with the Ahashis in the way that we were with.
Buddy, you were in on Ricky Ahashi to
I still think he has. He had universal charisma. He could have gotten over in any building in the world, but it wasn't the same as like Takuma Fujiwara. You know, that was something, like, I wasn't emailing Dave being like, dude, you got to watch this Ricky Ihashi match.
Sorry, we had a little bit of a dog emergency there.
I get it. No. All good. So I would say not Yoshioka, even though he was very good very quickly, but Ben, Shun, and Hio from the class of 2016. I would say Kento and Kame from 2019 into 2020. Mm-hmm. Fujiwara in 2021. Mochizuki Jr. in 2022, Tanaka in 2023, and now Sahara in 2024.
Yep, welcome to the list. We will just no matter what, I will find time to watch an Akihiro Sahara match.
Yeah, that's a really interesting discussion point of who have been the flavor of the month rookies in Dragon Gate. Because, you know, it was Shingo and Hulk, but it wasn't really Tozawa, and it wasn't really Ono.
Yamato was.
Yamato was. KZ wasn't. Yoshida wasn't. I don't even know if Echo would have been. Like, you know, the
King of Chop. King of Chop was, he was over as the King of Chop guy.
I guess, yeah. And then for me, you know, L. Lindemann was always my first. I was completely enamored with him when he debuted. So yeah, that's an interesting list. That's a fun little brain exercise. But I think Sahara's on that list now. The way that he has developed from being incredibly awkward but incredibly charming to now, he's just becoming a very good wrestler in front of our eyes. And I love witnessing that in real time.
Yeah, and it's something where, I mean, there is a kind of a little bit of a kind of countenance and resemblance where, like, you do get, and not to dredge it up, you do get a little bit of 2014 Ryotsu Shimizu vibes from him.
Oh, yeah, very much so.
Yeah. And that was the Cork and Hall show. They opened with a preview of the semi-main event where Paradox did not believe in Ishin's ability to count to three. As we learned in the semi-main event, he can do it very quickly. And that was a Cork and Hall case. We kind of talked around the Kyoto show. Really, it all that 10-man playing into the main event is the only thing of note on that show.
Yeah, watch the opener, watch the main event.
Yep, do not. No one needs to have any time for Punch Tominaga versus Benkei. No one needs to. but Case, we did not talk about our overall thoughts on Rey de Parejas. We ran through the blocks real quickly. I'll do it again. A block, Fuda and Yanagiuchi, Ishin and Kato, Minoli, Kamei and Rita, original Jimmies and Yoshioka and Daya. B block, Mochi and Sahara, Shun and Hamare, Ben and Junior, KZ and Strong Machine J. He will be back for that tournament. Yamato, Hulk, and then Hyo and Eichmann. Really kind of feels like with the situation with Minoli there and having Kamei and Rita in the block, I kind of feel like that you might want to have original D-Courage beat Minoli to set up a Twin Gate match outside of it, but it feels like a pretty open field to me if it's not Kamei and Rita.
Yeah, no, if it was Daya and Kakuta, I would say it's anybody's ballgame. It's Daya and Yoshioka, though, and so I think they're going to get a win over Minoru and Lee, and I think they're probably going to win the block from Susumu and Kagetora. We'll see how the lineups play out, but you have, I mean, Ishin and Kato, I think, are going to be booked very well, but are not going to win their block. Kamei and Rita, I think, are going to be booked very well and are the perfect second or third place team. And I think this comes down to Susumu and Kagetora or Daya and Yoshioka. And with Yoshioka coming back, I don't see any way that he loses. This could end up being like the Hulk and Tozawa Summer Adventure Tag League 2011 tournament, where it is just built for them to dominate.
Because they never had an opportunity to enter a tag team tournament as Yoshioka and Daya, because it was Yoshioka and Kakuta winning it in 2023, mm-hmm. and then 2024 Yoshioka was out. So it would be a big thing for them. And it's kind of like the last, other than the Triangle Gate, like the last thing for D-Courage is for Yoshioka and Daya to win the tag tournament.
Yeah, very much so.
And the B block, I think Yamato and Hulk will be booked strongly, but it feels like it could be anyone but Mochizuki and Sahara's ball game, really.
Yeah. Mochizuki and Sahara, Skywalker and Hamari, Ben and Junior, KZ and Strong Machine J, Yamato and Hulk, and Hyo and Eichmann. Yeah, it's not a block of star power. Now, it's an awesome in-ring block if you take out the Hyo team. It's five teams that I think could really crush it, but that is going to create a scenario where that is odd. I think they've backed off the Hamari thing a little bit. And I don't think he hasn't delivered. I just think the way they've presented him, there's a really hard ceiling on rookie cheating heel that only seems to have that one skill. This really could be a situation where Ben and Junior almost by default come out ahead in this block.
I think that they are favorites. I think KZ and Strong Machine J are favorites, to be honest. I mean, yeah, this is not an established Natural Vibes team, but I could see them very easily making it to whatever knockout happens.
Yeah, no, very much so. I mean, look, KZ and Strong Machine J are the perfect team to beat in the finals. That's just what it comes down to. Yeah.
But as we've said and have been figuring out, the tournament kicks off on March 1st. It goes throughout the month and it ends in Kobe to finish the match, the tournament there. But Case, Shun Skywalker had something on his mind throughout this entire Corkin card that we've gone an hour, 15 minutes without talking about.
So you informed me before we started recording that people are making a very big deal out of this, and that there are some concerns about Shun Skywalker's status in Dragon Gate. I would remind everybody to take a deep breath as Mike explains what is going to happen.
So this is a special produce show called SSW Quest 4. It will be occurring from Shinjuku Face on March 24th. Tickets are done through Dragon Gate. Actually, Case, I want to bring up something that you brought up when we were talking about this. It does kind of feel like a way to kind of veer away from the Buyuden Mochizuki produce shows, that we would be in time to have one coming up at that end of March, beginning of April. So that should be kind of kept in mind. The show is called SSW Quest 4, The Chosen Z's. The SSW Quest thing has kind of been interesting to see revived. Of course, if you were paying attention in 2023 when Shun Skywalker was Dreamgate champ and Kakuta was coming for him, Shun Skywalker tried to lay traps across it, including facing off a three-way match against all of D-Courage. That they were called SSW Quests. There's been three of those, so that's why this match is the fourth. Yeah, I've just, like, the overall, like, I've had enough people kind of reach out and going like, hey, is he doing his own thing? Is this kind of a way out, or is he doing more and this is kind of like a side thing that he is doing? I have no impression whatsoever that this is like an off-ramp or anything. I think more so, like, as soon as Case, you brought up the Buyuden thing, that's what it is to me. That's a replacement for Buyuden. And as I said, I think that this, the coolest thing to do is if Shun Skywalker goes and finds all of his masks and makes people wear them at the show in the crowd. Because
yeah, that'd be awesome.
Because who knows what this is going to be. I assume if this is the old Buyuden, that this will be on the network.
Yeah, until I'm given other information, I just think, yeah, like you said, and like, you know, I said before we started recording, this is just replacing the Buyuden show. I mean, Dragon Gate is heavily promoting it on their socials. Jay said on his Blue Sky account, because I do follow that, even with nothing announced, this is too much. Just wait for the announcements. This is a Dragon Gate encouraged show, we'll say.
Yeah. And really, it was just people reaching out, like, unfounded, like, and not to dismiss them. It's just,
I get it. I understand why anybody would be concerned, especially with Shun, but I think this is just him doing a cool thing.
Yeah, and especially, like, look what's happening right after that. Shun is one of the people that has been promoting the Dragon Gate Vegas shows. So don't worry too much, folks.
He was announced for... Was he announced yet?
He was announced for Pandemonium.
Thank you. All right, yeah. Shun's going to be there.
Yeah, we can say Shun's going to be in Vegas, yeah.
I've seen the Vegas list.
I put this
in the Voice of Wrestling Discord, not the list of names, but I've seen the list of the talent that are for sure coming over.
Mm-hmm.
It's a good list. It is not as... It does not skew as young as I would have liked. There's two names that I'm really bummed out aren't coming. They're in the same unit. They could have put them together. It would have been nice to have seen those guys in America. I think they would have gotten over in America.
Mm-hmm.
It's a very safe list that I think will do well.
You have shared it with me. The thing that without like people going to like mad searches, there are people that this would be their first time in the States. So there are new people coming to this.
Ishin and Hyo are both public, and those are going to be the new guys.
Yeah, Hyo and Ishin are new guys coming in, and then we'll see. Really, one of those names might not have worked America, but has worked internet.
You are correct about that. You're right. Okay, so, yeah. so that'd be three names that haven't wrestled in America of the names that we know. Now, I got that list from a non-Dragon Gate source. There could be more names out there. I was told by somebody else that depending on ticket sales, there could be more guys coming. I don't know who those names would be. Who knows? We'll see. But I have at least
seen... There are shows in Japan during that time, too.
Exactly. So they can't send everybody, but of the names that I have seen, I'll put it this way. I'm going to Vegas, and as of right now, I don't have buyer's remorse. I am still very excited to go, so...
Yeah, no. Our plane tickets and hotel rooms are booked in. Just having them back was enough for me, but seeing the list makes me confident in my choice to do that, basically, is what I would add.
And next Tuesday, we'll have a special guest on Open the Voice Gate talking about those Vegas shows themselves. So that should be very fun.
First time guest. But Case, I don't know if we really have a whole else lot left on the show this week. This actually ended up being a shorter one. Is there anything else you want to touch on before we got out of here?
No, like I said, I really liked the main event on that Corkin show. I would watch that, and especially the Yoshioka return angle if you have not seen that. I would watch the opening match with the continued growth of Akihiro Sahara, and I would be sure to watch Junior versus Daiki Yanagiuchi, because Daiki Yanagiuchi, much like his stablemate in Sahara, has entered must-watch territory. And so a tip of the cap to both of those men.
Mochizuki Dojo automatically paying dividends. I'm going to have to bring my Mochi Dojo t-shirt there.
The problem is that Fuda is just, I mean, he's just a complete non-entity.
I did see, I was scrolling in the Discord a little bit, because I stay away from the Discord before I watch the show, really. Mm-hmm. And I saw our good friend Lorenzo listing or showing a Dragon Gate program and what Ryo Fuda's logo is on it, and it is sore losers are the best and strongest.
The thing with him is that, you know, if he was traded, I don't want to say if he left, but if he would, let's hypothetical scenario, he's traded to the All Japan, Noah, or DDT Junior Division, so just DDT as a whole, or the All Japan or Noah Junior Division, I think he would thrive. I think he'd be fantastic in either of those promotions, but he does not have the charisma that you need to be a Dragon Gate wrestler. And it's just so painful when, you know, Daiki kind of, he joined Mochizuki Dojo with a certain level of momentum that Fuda didn't have. But for Sahara to join and to just blow past Fuda the way that he has, it is a little depressing to watch.
Yeah, maybe get Jamie O'D on the line. I want to propose Ryo Fuda for Keigo Nakamura.
I told you before we started recording, I'm watching some DDT right now. I watched Brooks versus Shuji Ishikawa, which I was not that into, but that's a Shuji Ishikawa problem, not a Chris Brooks problem. And now I'm gonna watch all of the D-Generation Cup tournament. That's my goal, is I want to find a really good young DDT kid. You know, with Indo not being in that promotion as much anymore and Higuchi returning in March, I felt like if there was ever a time to get back into DDT, it would be this time. So I watched the first D-Generation Cup show, liked it, didn't love it. And then I'm gonna do my best to catch up on DDT going forward. So we'll see there. Then once I get through that tournament, of course, I will get on the horn with Jamie, and we will have a trade that will make international ramifications between Dragon Gate and DDT.
I think that we need to, like, I'm still in mourning, obviously. Like, what I am glad that I've had an hour and a half talk without, somehow it's even, like, bled over my work, having an hour and a half talk without talking about Luka Doncic.
I wasn't going to do it to you.
I appreciate it.
Look, the Rams have decided that they want to move on from Cooper Kupp, and that is as painful of a athlete departure as I've had in my life, and it is a fraction of what you're going through. So I'm not even going to mention it.
One thing that, DFW, we're going through it. We're not happy. I did see a bootleg shirt that my wife sent me that I really badly want to get. It says, "Another ambush in Dallas." On one side of the photo, it's Luka. It has 225 LBJ, and then a photo of LeBron James. The other side, JFK 11-22-63, Lyndon Baines Johnson and LBJ on. I want it so bad, but yeah, no. Shit sucks. We need to be able to say, like, hey, no, you don't want to worry about Keigo Nakamura. Come on, we're doing you a favor. You really want Ryo Fuda.
No, it'll be good. No, I don't need any draft picks. It's fine. It's fine. No, just give them. Just hand them over.
Yeah. Oh, we need to get someone in here to make the money work out. Okay. I guess Issei Onizuka gets tossed in. You know?
All right, Mike. We'll go dwell on the loss of your great basketball franchise, and we'll be back next week with a special first-time guest.
Absolutely. You could follow us on social media at Open Voice Gate, as we referred to it before. The best place to kind of hang out and chat about Dragon Gate on the internet is the Voices of Wrestling Discord. In the Dragon Gate channel, we also have an Open the Voice Gate channel as well, currently talking about ranking the Reiwa 6 and then really kind of coming into terms about Kota Minoru. But you go check that out, the Voices Wrestling Discord, the Dragon Gate, and Open the Voice Gate channels. You could also follow us on Twitter. Don't follow KS on Blue Sky.
Don't do it. Not interested. It's like seeing Joe Gagne. I have no interest.
Yep. Just avoid it. But he is _ in your case on Twitter. I'm Fujiheya. Thanks for listening to Voice Gate. We'll be back with you next week. Take care, everyone.
Hey everybody, my name is Jesse Collings, and I want to tell you all about my show, the Gentlemen's Wrestling Podcast, here on the Voices of Wrestling Podcast Network. On the Gentlemen's Wrestling Podcast, we do a thorough analysis on the biggest issues and trends within the pro wrestling industry. We talk a lot about pro wrestling media, we talk a lot about fan culture and wrestling's place within general pop culture, and we talk about the broader influences that are shaping the way we discuss and analyze the pro wrestling industry. We've had some of the brightest minds in the pro wrestling intelligentsia on the show, including WrestleNomics host Brandon Thurston, both Rich Kreich and Joe Lanza from the Flagship Wrestling Podcast, Trevor Dame from the Through the Years podcast, and a whole lot more. This isn't a show for hot takes. It's not a show recapping the latest episode of television. This is a show focusing on the biggest topics in pro wrestling and doing a deep dive on the real stories behind the surface level analysis you might find elsewhere. The Gentlemen's Wrestling Podcast is available wherever you get your podcasts, and we'd really appreciate it if you gave us a try. Thanks.
For a limited time at Verizon, you can get our best price ever for a single line. Just $45 per month when you bring your phone, which is less than you spend on too tired to cook takeout every week. Get one line on unlimited welcome for $45 per month with AutoPay plus taxes and fees. Visit your local Cleveland Verizon store by April 2nd to save. $20 monthly promo credits applied over 36 months with a new line on unlimited welcome. In times of congestion, unlimited 5G and 4G LTE may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Domestic data roaming at 2G speeds. Additional terms apply. For a limited time at Verizon, you can get our best price ever for a single line. Just $45 per month when you bring your phone, which is less than you spend on too tired to cook takeout every week. Get one line on unlimited welcome for $45 per month with AutoPay plus taxes and fees. Visit your local Columbus Verizon store by April 2nd to save. $20 monthly promo credits applied over 36 months with a new line on unlimited welcome. In times of congestion, unlimited 5G and 4G LTE may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Domestic data roaming at 2G speeds. Additional terms apply.